From the independent producer project of KCRW and KCRW.com, I'm Bob Carlson, and this is Unfictional. Unfictional is a program of stories and personal documentaries. And today on the program, another episode from radio storyteller Joe Frank. Every few months, we've been premiering a new episode from a radio legend who's been producing work for most of the last three decades that is strange, dark, uncomfortable, often hilarious, and weaves back and forth between the truth and the surreal. And on today's episode, a man's experiences with women, beginning with his mother, create misery for everyone. And a warning that this program contains material that may be offensive to some people. There's no foul language, but there is some mature and disturbing descriptions that are probably not suitable for children. From KCRW.com, it's Unfictional with Sunken Ship by Joe Frank.
Visiting mom at the home. She tells me the food is unfit for humans. Yesterday, her tuna sandwich had a fish head in it, and last night, she found the tail of an animal in her potato salad. She says the food is going to kill her. Look how skinny I am, she says. I'm just skin and bones, and my clothes hang off me like they took the drapes down from the windows and put them around my shoulders. Do you know that the people who wash the toilet bowls are the same people who cook the food? They make the beds and wash the clothes, and when the clothes come back, they've got so much soap in them, I swear I get bubbles under my arms. Every day is the same thing, she says. You wake up, they dress you, bring you down for breakfast, then you go back to your room, you read a magazine, you watch some TV, you go to the bathroom. I went three times today, she says. I sat on the toilet for 20 minutes. I was squeezing and squeezing. And then, finally, one little plop. You want to see it? Here, look, I have it in my purse. And sometimes, she says, her bowel movements are like fudge sauce. And other times, they're so big and hard, it's like squeezing out a cantaloupe. She says she reached down into the water and lifted one out with her hand and could see a little piece of corn and a fish eye. And sometimes people don't come down for breakfast, and everyone knows they died during the night, but no one says anything. And she thinks the cooks are grinding up the bodies and serving them in the food, because last week she found shoelaces and Mrs. Biedermeier's ear with one of her earrings, a little cameo of a smiling cherub in the spaghetti. I know those earrings, she says. And what they don't mix in the food, they use for fertilizer. You can see the workers spreading the old people's ground up powdery bones in the garden. You think I'm making this up, she says. No one could make this up. What did I do today? What do you think I did? What's there to do here? Don't get old. Whatever you do, don't get old. Then she begins crying. I want to go to sleep and never wake up. That's what I want. Why am I alive? What good is it? These old people, their families put them in this place. They abandon them. They want to get rid of them. They visit. They talk. Play cards. And then they go away and don't come back for 2 weeks. In the olden days, when I was growing up in Europe, the old people were kept in the family. My grandmother had her own room in the house until the day she died at 106. Look, if your apartment isn't big enough, she says, we could get a larger place. I could live at one end and you could live at the other. You could get 24-hour nursing care for me. They would change the diapers and do all the things you couldn't. I tell her I like where I live, and besides, there isn't enough room for her, my girlfriend, and me. and she says, "Here, take this pillow. Push it down on my face. Suffocate me. I'll lie on my back and make it easy for you. Then you can call the lawyer and the estate manager and say a few words at the service. And then everyone will feel sorry for you. They'll think, 'Oh, he's so sad. He lost his mother. Poor boy. Now he's an orphan.' Before you were born, I was a runway model. Look at these pictures. See how slender I was? I was a gorgeous woman. Then, after you were born, I was never able to return to my career because I got stretch marks and horrible blue veins up and down my legs, and I gained 65 pounds. And when you sucked my breasts, it was so painful that sometimes I thought you were going to devour me, to eat me alive. You were like a little cannibal, and I had the feeling if I didn't control you, you would begin with my breasts and end up with the stumps of my legs. But did I complain? Did I send you away? Did I put you in a home for little children? Did I lock you away in an asylum? No, I didn't. And now look at what you're doing to me. Is this what I get in return? You should have brought me here in a cattle car with old people piled on top of each other." Then she suggests that we take a cruise. We could go to Japan and see the beautiful cherry blossoms. And I'd be wearing a silk kimono, she says, and wooden sandals and ivory chopsticks to hold my hair together. And the Japanese people would see us and say, 'What a good boy, helping his mama-san like that.' And we could go to the baths where everybody's naked and they'd wash us with soap and oils. 'You can't be serious,' I say. 'Why not? I'm your mother. You came from my body. There's no shame. I powdered your tuchus, and when I put oil on your scrotum, your little penis got so hard, it was like a tiny pencil. Mom, okay, go home. I see how you always open the window when you come in, as if you can't stand the smell of an old woman's body. So go. I'll be fine. I can lie here and look at the wall.' I leave her room and walk through the common area, where I pass people sitting on couches and in wheelchairs, sleeping, staring into space, or watching an old movie on TV. Hockey puck, treetop lodge, railway crossing guard, cashew nut, luggage tag, Tibetan business card, hunter's hat, canvas-backed duck, nightmare snowdrift, black pepper and clay. New Year's Eve, I'm in the hospital. A big, fat washerwoman from Georgia, with long red fingernails with ivory tips, washes the corridors at night, laughs all the time, has three boys in prison and one in the army, and is always singing hymns and quoting from the Bible. All the patients love her for her great spirit. The nurses' strike has called for crisis management, and she enters my room wearing a white uniform, turns me over, and empties my bedpan. When she washes my private parts, I become somewhat aroused. She pretends to ignore it, but I know she's pleased. Thank you. eyes were of tempered glass as she looked at me from across the bamboo table, chewing plantain in a search for the golden ratio around the sole source of light that hung above us. She'd been reading Neruda to me, and as I trembled and sweated, she recited, "I am nothing but the empty net which has gone ahead of human eyes." And she pressed two fingers to the underside of my wrist. Earlier that evening, we'd spent hours discussing the merits and follies of different forms of worship. She insisted on the importance of ritual and belief. Then we were standing in a garden, under plants hanging from trellises, where the moonlight was torn and tattered by thorns. And she said, "We should take a drive. The air would do you a world of good. We could stop at the Bombay Grill, an excellent restaurant a few miles from here." And she used one hand to steady me, while with the other she opened the car door for me to get in. She was as restless as the sea itself, and her frantic driving reflected it. I'm having dinner at a window table in my favorite Indian restaurant overlooking Melrose Avenue. I'm eating basmati rice and lamb when I see a car driving erratically across the median into oncoming traffic. It veers back, hitting a cyclist in a yellow racing uniform just as he's lifting a water bottle to his lips. The cyclist smashes headfirst against a wall and slides slowly down to the sidewalk. The car swerves again, turns in the direction of the restaurant. Everyone dives behind tables and chairs, and I watch the driver, a young woman wearing a red dress, crash through the restaurant window and plow into a wall. She steps out of the car and examines her passenger, an old man who has flown through the windshield and is sprawled in shattered glass on the hood of the car. One of her shoes is lying in a bowl of mulgatani soup. Jogging on the track in Santa Monica, a tall black woman races past me. I watch her recede into the distance, and 2 minutes later she comes around and passes me again. I wonder if she runs competitively. The next time she goes by, I notice she has a very large bosom. I wonder how much her breasts weigh, and if they slow her down, they're certainly not aerodynamic. No one would build a race car or a jet plane with two heavy appendages hanging off the front. I'm sure she could be a more successful runner without this handicap. As she approaches to overtake me the third time, I flag her down. I inform her that I'm a cosmetic surgeon and offer my services. Breast reduction surgery would improve her performance. She stares at me with her hands on her hips, thanks me coldly, jogs away and off the track, out of sight. I know she's dialing 911. I decide to leave. A few minutes later, I'm sitting at a corner table at Tandoori Palace. Across from me is a Russian fashion model. I know this because I lived in Moscow for 2 years when I was working for the CIA, and I'm familiar with Russian-accented English. I've seen her face in glossy portrait ads in Vanity Fair. She's gorgeous, wearing an off-the-shoulder gown, showing off her throat and shoulders. People at the other tables can't take their eyes off her. But when she lifts her drink, I notice that her hand is unnaturally large. I lean over to her table and say, "Your fingers look like sausages. You must come from peasant stock. What did your grandfather do? Dig in the dirt for roots?" Then I turn back to my dinner and continue eating. The chicken marsala is delicious. Women tease, color, and braid their hair. Some cut it short, others long. They wear bangs, ponytails, page boys, cascading ringlets, or they wear their hair straight down their backs and on either side of their faces, like Veronica Lake. And many men have drowned in that lake. Some women paint their fingernails different colors and even decorate them with stars, whorls, astrological signs, and they wear every shade of lipstick from light pink to black. And they apply mascara to thicken their lashes and put a base of liquid makeup on their skin to smooth it out and add rouge to cover any imperfections and give them the blush of youth. They spray perfume on their necks, breasts, behind their knees, and they wear earrings, necklaces, arm and ankle bracelets, and pumps to elongate their legs and make them appear taller, causing their backs to arch slightly, pressing their breasts forward and raising their rumps. And they wear net or dark stockings and short skirts, tank tops, and off-the-shoulder dresses with enticing low necklines. And you can't help wondering, what is she hiding behind all that artifice? I've been informed that my mother has escaped from the nursing home, and an intense search has been mounted. I drive to the home, where soldiers wearing night vision goggles are shouting to each other, and helicopters are flying overhead with special infrared sensors that can detect the heat of a body. I hear urgent orders being given over squawking radios, the sound of an occasional shot being fired, military vehicles racing back and forth, roadblocks set up, and people being stopped and asked to show their identification papers while their cars are searched. Nearby homes are invaded and ransacked, furniture overturned, bureaus and closets emptied, plumbing torn out in case my mother flushed herself down the toilet or somehow managed to squeeze into a water heater. The manager of the nursing home is interviewed and describes with embarrassment my mother's escape, and a hapless nurse is fired for incompetence. Golf in the kingdom, ampule of pure light. Children find cadaver, harlequin at mass, Eucharist on roller skate, volleyball and cancer. Rushing water brings headless body, life of rapture, death in the dark. Accidental pilgrim goes from cave painting to Ohio, from suspension bridge to martyrdom, from test tube to the unreflecting famous, an object lesson to the doubtful guest. I know I was never meant to whisper endearing words into the ears of a beautiful woman in a Bloomingdale's catalog, but this is what the tiny man with huge banana fingers urged me to do as we stood under a spider web dangling from a lamp like a mute orchestra of corpses. I'm no fool, and only feign deafness, like a stranger at a dinner table, pretending ignorance of a language so that he might better discern the thoughts of others. Once, walking back to my apartment, I passed a couple fornicating in a graveyard. The man's eyes had been poked out by thumbtacks. The woman's hair was on fire, and a small orchestra passed them on a float, pulled by slaves.
How long's the road ahead of me? How far back did you begin?
Every evening I jog on the track. I like the sound of the cinders crunching under my shoes, the breeze brushing my face, the way running seems to drive the voices from my mind. My shirt soaked with sweat, I breathe in deeply the cool evening air. Moonlight slanting through a web of tangled branches above me. Tonight, I come out into a town square where a girl is standing waist deep in the water of a public fountain with an enormous head of hair, a pale face, and a sad look in her eyes. She's naked, her clothes floating in the water around her, and there's an old man leaning on a cane watching her. My eyes are like portholes in a sunken ship.
I fell in love long time ago when I was young. I was so lost, all gone before it had begun. It always comes back around. It always.
A nurse calls me from the hospital. She tells me my mother has refused her medication and they need to change her diapers because she's had a bowel movement and the room stinks, but she won't let anyone near her. The nurse asks me to reason with her and hands my mother the phone. My mother's in a state of panic. I have to get out of here. Call an ambulance. I want to go back to Ocean Gardens. I can't do that, Mom. You need to stay in the hospital until you're well. You can go back to Ocean Gardens when your doctors say it's okay. All they want is my money. They're going to charge me for everything. Please call an ambulance. Look, Mom, nobody wants to take your money. Medicare covers everything. You won't have to pay a cent. And the nurses don't get anything from you either. They work on a salary. They're paid for the work they do. Why do they have to be paid? Because they have to live. They have to pay for food and rent and clothing for their children. Do you expect them to work for nothing? To spend hours at the hospital taking care of people for nothing? Yes, she screams. You're acting crazy. I need to get out of here. They want to kill me. What are you talking about? Why would they want to kill you? When the nurse asks her to give her back the phone, she shrieks, "Get away from me! Don't touch me! No, I'm not giving it back to you!" Then I hear her and the nurse wrestling for control of the phone, when suddenly their struggle is cut off by the dial tone.
If ever you try to remember me, think of the good. Think of the bad. When you feel low, try to keep both feet on the ground. Watch what you say, all that you do will come back around. It always comes back around. It always back around.
I'm eating a sandwich in a deli when I see a woman sitting alone in a booth. She has a humped back, large ears, folds of flesh under her chin, and eyes the color of muddy water. She's wearing an old print dress and carrying a net bag of carrots, snow peas, and a copy of the National Enquirer. There's something about her that strikes me. Then I realize she's Susan, my first love in eighth grade.
it always comes back around. If ever you try to remember me, think of the good and think of the bad. You low, try to keep both feet on the ground. Watch what you say, all that you do will come back around. It always comes back around. It always comes back around.
Get winded just thinking. Must lower expectations.
How many ways did you fall? I fell in love long time ago when I was young. I was so lost, all done before it had begun. It always comes back around. It always comes back around.
You've been listening to Sunken Ship, written and narrated by Joe Frank and mixed by Ray Guarna. Special thanks to Michael Story. And you can find many more Joe Frank programs, most of his career-long archive, in fact, at joefrank.com. I'm Bob Carlson, producer of Unfictional. The associate producer is Nick White. There's an archive of all the past episodes of this program going back 4 years at our website, kcrw.com/unfictional. You can always podcast this show on iTunes or any of your favorite podcast sources. You can also stream the program with the KCRW app for iOS and Android. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter, @unfictional, and like us on Facebook. Unfictional is part of the independent producer project of KCRW. As usual, thanks to the Annenberg Foundation, the Goldhirsch Foundation, and the Roth Family Foundation for their support. I hope you'll join me next time for Unfictional from KCRW.com.